we do not have laws in place that protect art. So our art is easily duplicated and plagiarized. A good film can come out, you spend 500-600 million naira on it, someone has downloaded it and is sharing it. The concept that it is fraud doesn't even exist in their brains.
She's graced our screens as the host of some of Africa's most beloved TV shows, from Moments with Mo on Ebony Live TV to The Juice on Idani TV.
The great thing about life is that there are different parts of you, and it's time for me to explore this other part of me. I don't play games with my art. I take classes when I need to take classes. I need to know how to do it, and maybe to a fault, I'm trying to be a perfectionist.
As the executive producer of Bolinto Media Group, she's behind groundbreaking content like On the Carpet and the AMVCA-nominated documentary God's Wives, shedding light on the struggles of widows in Nigeria.
Doing anything in Nigeria, it is just like hitting your head on the wall. To shoot in a place like Lagos Island, what you have to go through, the people you have to palm their hand, the agbeyos you have to calm down. And people don't understand that the ecosystem of the country is not doing as much to help.
Through her work, she's not just telling stories, she's sparking conversations that matter. How do you feel that women are being represented in today's Nollywood, and is anything you would change?
Bonale, if someone was to click into this conversation, what would you want them to know about you?
Ooh, you guys are dropping it hot. I'm very big on legacy, no pun intended. Legacy is very important to me. So in the way I live my life, intention is something that is at the top of my mind with every decision I make. I think about, what do I want to think? Where do I want to be in 10 years, in 15 years? And also, what impact do I want to have on the world, or at least try to have on people around me? If, you know, the world can be your very small 10 people. So legacy and intention are two things that are core values in the way I live my life.
I love you say legacy, because we're going to take it a little bit back, right, into your childhood. And so I want to understand, you lived in a lot of different countries, okay, and diverse, okay? So you were Nigeria, Israel, Kenya, United States, all very different countries. So I want to understand, how did all these diverse cultural experiences shape who you are today?
In such an impactful way. So I think there's a term called a third culture kid. And just for anybody who doesn't know it, basically you come from one culture and you live in another country, but you attend a school of another country. So I'm Nigerian. I lived in Israel, but I went to an American school. And because of that, I went to a school that had many different kids from different parts of the world. My dad used to work for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, so he's a retired diplomat. And it shaped me, because I didn't grow up, well, at least for 4 years, I came back to school in Nigeria, but I had a different cultural experience at home, you know? So my friends in school, you know, "Mom, don't talk to me like that." And I have a mother that is like, "If you try it." Do you know what I mean? So when you're growing up and you're being shaped and seeing the way your friends are being raised culturally versus where you're coming from, it really, you kind of become almost like a shapeshifter sometimes. And I had to really understand the power of my culture. And it also made me very curious, which is probably why I do what I do. I remember when I was in fourth grade, I won an award for the most curious, that I asked the most questions. And I used to think I was going to become a lawyer because of that. Well, people used to tell me I should be a lawyer. But I became very curious about other people. And I also, I think it also gave me a lot of confidence in that I was around people from different cultures, so I acclimatized very well to environment. I'm not a shy person, like, you know. And then I also had a lot of transition. And that, I think, sometimes is good and bad. I think that's maybe why I'm in therapy also, because people came in out of my life very quickly. So a lot of those things shaped me to who I am today. For the most part, I think the good, to be honest, for the most part.
I feel like I can relate to the story a little bit, because I moved to the US when I was about 14, 15. But I was then the only black kid in like the white high school we went to. So you had to literally adapt. They thought I represented all of blackness. I didn't get to choose what black I could be. And it reminded me of, have you ever read The Allegory of the Cave by Plato? So it's this prose where he's talking about what it feels like to be in a cave, and you're seeing shadows because you're seeing the lights from the shadows. But everyone's thinking, you know, these shadows represent something, maybe they're gods or whatever, because they've never been outside. So they don't know what it really means, right? And so when one of them manages to escape the cave, he then sees, oh, these things that we thought were gods that while we're in the cave are not gods. They're just shadows of people who are walking. Mm. So he goes around, he's traveled and he's seen things. But when he gets back to the cave, he's like, yo, guys, these things are not gods. But they're like, no, what do you know? And because they don't want him to demolish their belief system, they end up killing him. And so the name of the book is called The Allegory of the Cave. The reason why I'm bringing it up is I feel like as a world traveler, I always tell Chica this, like, if we're privileged enough to travel the world, you see for other people. Mm. You think for other people, and you will also talk for other people because you have that responsibility for, you know, folks who don't have the ability to do that.
Yeah, definitely. Know? It's crazy because I think this is a life that I've known, and I've known it since I was, I mean, it's like what I grew up in. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until, you know, for example, when I went to the States, you know, and in America, it's even crazier that people are even less traveled.
Yeah.
And I say that less traveled in terms of like, I can be around people who have the same education level as me, have the same access to opportunities, and they're less traveled. In Nigeria, it's a bit different. If someone is less traveled, it's probably because of financial reasons, right? Nigerians are curious people.
Yeah.
And I really realized that, you know, going to university, that because I did my senior year of high school in America, that was insane. Mm. That was like a shock because I just remember thinking to myself, I'm supposed to get there, meet the cutest boy, we become prom king and prom queen. And it was nothing like that. And I think for me, that was one of those like reminders of how joy is never, because I wanted to go to America so much. Mm-hmm. Joy is never found in a place. It's always about the people you're with.
Yes.
You know, and growing up and traveling and moving around, I learned that very quickly. It also taught me to be very content with what I have and where I am. So I'm fortunate. I feel very fortunate about that.
Amazing. So I want you to talk about, you know, we know you as this amazing, beautiful TV host.
Thank you.
You know, one of Nigeria's most celebrated. We've also seen you lately in not only film, but also TV shows. So everything from Smart Money Woman to The Wedding Party to It's So Good. The name goes on, right?
Yeah.
You've been on Netflix, and I really want to understand what made you explore acting, you know, especially as a host. What made you do that transition?
So something that people don't actually know is my very first gig was an acting gig, but I turned it down. So when I first started in the industry, I went for a few auditions, and this is when I was doing my NYSC. I did NYSC 1 full year, lived in Ekiti. Please, nobody should ever say that I didn't do NYSC. But NYSC is this thing that we have to do in Nigeria. Anyways, so I actually started auditioning for acting gigs, and I was told that, you know, you're pretty good, you have good talent there. And I was cast in Before 30. I don't know if you guys know that.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah, that was a good one.
I was cast in Before 30 as one of the four girls, but I just didn't feel like I was ready. Ooh. So I turned it down, and I went to Australia. And while I was in Australia, I heard about Moments with Mo. So then I flew back to Nigeria and I auditioned for Moments with Mo and I got it. And I think what for me was really important was, like I said, impact has always been something that's really important to me. And I want to use my platform to ensure that I just give people different ways of thinking. Mm. 'Cause, you know, I think our content and our industry and the world, like sometimes we can be so wrapped up in ourselves and we're not thinking about like what the future is or what the reality of our community is. And that's what's been always a passion in mine, that my content lets people ask and be for others. Mm. Now, I've been able to do that really well with my content and with being a host. And the great thing about life is that there are different parts of you. Mm. And it's time for me to explore this other part of me. I don't play games with my art. I take classes when I need to take classes. I need to know how to do it. And maybe to a fault, I'm trying to be a perfectionist because honestly, whatever. But I've been taking a lot of classes for acting, and I feel like it's time. I'm really excited because I feel like I've grown and I feel like I've gotten better. We'll see when it comes up. You guys agree? Or you guys are like, get out of the screen. But, you know, it's just a different season. I'm never going to box. I used to box myself. Mm. And, you know, Chika, I'm so happy you mentioned this. And, you know, at the beginning of the year, I said this. We had a nice, intimate dinner for the, you know, just softness. Chika is hosting us. And I said it out loud.
Yeah.
And I needed to say it out loud because you have fear will prevent me from saying it out loud because, you know, I've always been known as, because the truth is in the industry, people know me like, Bolale doesn't act. Like, that's my MO. And now it's like, oh, why are you making a U-turn? Why are you trying to, you know, and it's like, I'm making a U-turn because I want to. because I'm ready, because I have it in me. And also because I want to explore a different part of my art. Mm. That's why. Yeah.
But I want to go back, because when you got the role, right?
Yeah,
for Before 30. So what made you feel like at that moment you weren't prepared?
So you know what's crazy? And that's the crazy thing, is like I got the role and I just didn't feel like the right fit. I didn't feel God-led, you know, to be honest and to be sincere. It didn't feel like it was where my life and where God was leading me to at that time. And I think that when I look back at it, I'm so happy that I made the decision, because there was so much work that I wanted to do with my voice. And you know, the crazy thing about it is I could have done it simultaneously. I chose not to. Mm-hmm. And that's because I'm very like, one path, you stick to it, mm-hmm. you focus on it. Now, this is where the last few years have been years of me releasing control.
Yeah.
Because every time I'm like, well, why aren't I not doing both? Because people will call me, you guys. They say, I want to audition for something. The only time I did one acting gig, this was before Smart Money. Mm. I think I had a bill to pay. And someone was like, do you want to act? I said, bring it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but I just felt like I needed to be good at one thing and be known for that. Mm. And I've done very well in that. I've been able to conquer that experience, or I feel like I've expressed as much of myself from that. So now I'm ready to, you know, explore into acting. Mm. I think I could have done both. I just was being, this is where sometimes you put a thought in your mind. Mm. And if you're not willing to be flexible or allow what God is leading you into other spaces, you can actually prevent yourself from having a blessing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I feel like, you know, life is also about seasons, right? And one of the frameworks I feel like even now I'm learning is you will always have to reinvent yourself in every season.
Yeah.
And what tends to happen is, because sometimes you've used your own mouth to say, I'm not going to be this, other people will then come and want to hold you to what you said. But like you said, you have to be able to let it go and say, look, this moment calls for reinvention, but also have the courage and go back to people and say, hey, I was wrong, girl.
When I tell you guys, it's been such an interesting journey. And I think it's been really humbling because, you know, the power of your tongue and your words. And I've been, you know, reaching out to people to let them know that, you know, I'm interested. I'm back out. I want to do this. And I think that if I chose my ego over kind of going back to say, hey, I've changed my mind,
yes,
I would be stuck in one place.
Yeah.
So that's been a really humbling experience, like exactly hitting the nail on the head. You know, that's why they say never, but if you said never, you come back and you say, I'm taking my never back.
Yes.
So it is what it is.
You back my never.
So I want to also understand, now that you're in Nollywood, what are some common misconceptions about the industry that you personally want to address?
Oh, man. You know, funny enough, I've done really amazing projects. That's the crazy part. I've done MTV Sugar.
Yeah.
I did Isokan, which was a great project with Jade. I've done Smart Money, which, of course, was a great project. And the projects I've done have always been with very intentional producers and directors. Until you create a project, I really believe that we have very little experience, opportunity to criticize. I know this sounds like that's what art is for criticism, but the Nollywood creating, if you guys know, doing anything in Nigeria, it is just like hitting your head on the wall. So I think common misconceptions is that Nollywood people are just trying to rush through projects and are just trying to create. And it's like, no, there are so many roadblocks. Just go out with a normal DSLR camera and try and shoot something on the corner. Someone is going to come and tell you can't shoot. Even when you have that, like I remember for, I believe it was Isokan, where Jade, they were shooting in Lagos Island. It was serious though. Like, to shoot in a place like Lagos Island, what you have to go through, the people you have to palm their hand, the aguas you have to calm down. You know, it was really serious. And people don't understand that the ecosystem of the country is not doing as much to help. I think Lagos State is finally waking up to the fact that this is a film hub. You got to back it up. You got to support it. Just like LA, right? When you think of LA, there are tax cuts for people who create
film
movies.
Yeah, in
LA. So there's a lot of misconception that Nollywood people are just trying to rush through and they just, you know, do whatever and there's no creativity. You're battling NEPA. You're battling Agbero's. You're battling the lack of funding, which is one of the major issues, because you think about it, right? when you take your film, and now we know like streaming's, the packages is completely is different. But when you take your film to a cinema, the cinema is going to take their own percentage. When you see people, Nollywood directors and producers at cinema wearing t-shirt, literally begging, like you have to go and you're like, please watch the film, please watch the film. They're not doing it because they're bored. Mm. They're doing it because the system, and also Nigeria, just is still struggling with accepting the cinema idea of watching film. Yeah. And I say that because we do not have laws in place that protect art. Mm. So our art is easily duplicated mm-hmm. and plagiarized. Mm-hmm. So that means that a good film can come out. You spend 500-600 million naira on it. Someone has downloaded it and is sharing it and saying,
on Telegram.
This is exactly. And not only are they sharing it, the concept that it is fraud doesn't even exist in their brains.
Yeah. Mm.
It's not like people are being vindictive. They actually don't understand, why should I have to pay for content? Because think about how we grew up. It was DVD.
Yeah.
Tape. You watch it, Eche. You will give it to Chika. Chika will give it to me. Yeah. We will share.
Yeah, even so books.
Exactly. Even books, PDFs. Yeah. Like, we don't have a concept that art needs to be paid for. And I also think that laws need to be put in place. So I think a lot of the work that needs to happen in Nollywood, it's no longer the artists or the creators. We need infrastructural support. Like, there's only so far we can get that if the government doesn't support to say, this is art and this is what needs to be exported from Nigeria, I don't know if we're going to export it the way it should be exported, like Bollywood.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw John Boyega's interview where he spoke to maybe the difference between shooting in Nigeria and shooting in South Africa. Mm-hmm. I remember one of the things, going back to the misconceptions about Nollywood, I would always wonder, you see a movie, everything is going well, it's making sense. Next thing you know, pyong. I'm like, wait, at what point did the budget run out here? I remember I watched, I don't know if it was Merry Men or something.
Okay,
I don't know if it was Merry Men, but some movie where normal movie, there's gone, there's shooting. Next thing you know, juju, and people are disappearing. And then the car is flying. And I'm like, if you ran out of the script, just say you ran out of the script. What are we doing here now?
You ran out of ideas.
Like, what's going on? But the reason why I'm asking is, could you speak to what he said about the difference in maybe professionalism and even budget, where maybe Netflix has given money for a certain amount. People are saying, okay, instead of shooting for $1 million, I'll go and shoot it for $100,000. Have you seen stuff like that as well?
I've heard rumors of it. Yeah. And you know, I don't know if there's anything concrete of it, but I think culturally, right? Like, you think about what we do sometimes in culture where, you know, we're always trying to sometimes game the system.
Yeah.
So I think it's possible that most definitely in the fact that, you know, if someone gets a budget, they're going to skim off the top. But I think the major issue, like he mentioned, was the professionalism. Mm-hmm. I've always asked myself, why does Hollywood go to South Africa to get talent and art, to get artists and actors, and they don't come here? Have you guys ever wondered that? Mm-hmm. When we are technically the biggest exporter of film, black film in the world.
And human capital.
Why are they not coming here to find African
talent
actors and to find, like, okay, you want an African in your film. Okay. They'd rather go to UK to go and find Nigerian British people to be in their film than to come to Nigeria. There was a movie I was watching recently where a bunch of people were speaking Yoruba and it was atrocious. The worst Yoruba I've ever heard in my life. It was a Hollywood movie. Oh, I wish I could remember, but it was really bad. Mm. And I remember just thinking to myself, are you telling me you couldn't come to Nigeria to find Yoruba people to speak? There's no structures for them to come. Mm-hmm. Hollywood does not go, they're not going to DM you as an actor.
Yeah.
They must have an agent. There must be an agency. There must be a rate card. There must be a system. So because we don't have that, they go to places like South Africa. South Africa, this is the amount of hours we shoot. This is what per diem is like. This is what the structure. Hollywood does not like when there's no structure. So in many ways, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. And I know the Actors Guild, like, they're trying to put things together. But again, it comes with collaboration.
Yeah.
I'll give you guys an example. And I think it's happening. It's beginning to happen. You can see it. People are collaborating. They're not competing. You can see actors, you know, coming together, being executive producers on a movie and making sure that the movie does well. So I love that. But I'll give you an example. In the beauty industry in America, influencers. When influencers, the idea first started, and this was with a friend who's an OG influencer told me. Mm. She said that what first had started was makeup artists, especially beauty influencers, when brands would come and meet them, they were only giving them products. That was it. And all of them were like, this thing cannot work. It's not fair. Do you know what they did? They all came together and they said, no, not one person agreed to take a product without payment.
Yeah.
And that was how the beauty industry shifted. For influencing is now, of all influencing, is probably the most lucrative.
Yeah.
Because they set their rates together, they banded together, and they made sure that the structure was good from the start. Mm-hmm. At some point, I think everyone in the industry has to literally come together. Yeah. Like, it needs to be, no, this is, we're not doing this anymore. If we don't ever do that, it's always going to be the way it is.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
Structure.
And I love how you just spoke about women, because that's one of my next questions, which is, how do you feel that women are being represented in today's Nollywood? And is there anything you would change? That's a long song.
That's such a good question. And what you, and I just make sure that what I know what you're asking is in film, right? Not women. Not the
in
producers.
In film. How we're portrayed.
So, you know, I think I feel like we should talk about skits. And I say skits because skits are part of the content, and it's part of Nollywood, and it's part of art. I think I'm really tired of seeing, there's a huge idea being pushed and a narrative that Nigerian women really just are always sleeping around, and it's sleeping around for money. I am so over it. I'm over it in the skits. I'm overseeing it in content. Mm-hmm. I'm over it. I'm over seeing the young girl dressed skimpy, and then, you know, there's an older man who's interested in her, and then they swap sex for money, which is prostitution. And I'm really tired of, like, the constant belittling of, and this idea that Nigerian women are always in it for transactional sex. And I think that we have to be very careful, because we have a very young population. Like, the media, I think the median age in Nigeria is like, isn't it 18?
18, yeah.
It's 18. That's very young, you guys. So even though us, Agbasidi, in Yoruba means like old age has come, like we're on the other side. So impressionable. We don't see what's happening online. Like, there's a part of social media that we don't see. And I think I recently like tapped into it one day, and I was just like,
was it on TikTok?
It was on TikTok. You know, and I was so nervous, because I was just like, oh my gosh. You know, the narrative is, if you sell your body, if you dress provocatively, you're going to be rewarded with money. Mm. And that's coming from our movies. It's coming from our content. Mm. It's coming from a lot of that, right? Now, what we don't understand is, one of the biggest machines that America has is Hollywood. What's Hollywood? What did you, anything we knew about America, was it not from film?
Yeah.
So
it's when we all got to America and we didn't see the land was paid gold. With gold, we're like, oh. Yeah. But till today, whenever I'm in LA and I see people come to LA, their eyes, they're like, oh. We have the ability to do that with our film and our content. And I think we're shooting ourselves in the foot by not. I understand that, you know, that kind of content sells. I understand that it gets eyeballs, but we can actually use content to change and reframe the narrative.
Yeah.
We have the ability to use our content to say good about Nigeria and to tell people what we want and to tell them what ideals we want them to have. Mm. What are the ideals that American movies pass on? Hard work is good. Help your neighbor. Be a family-orientated person. That's why you see someone will get the job of their dreams. But instead of choosing the job of their dreams, what would they do? They will go and choose the husband or the wife in the small town, because that Wall Street job is a villain. Mm. Like, America is very good at passing across family values. We have to do that with our content. Like, women, and I think a lot of the female directors and a lot of they're doing an amazing job. But when it comes down to like content and everyday consumables, because I consider that part of Nollywood, I think that we're not doing a good job in that.
Yeah.
Like, the everyday short form, the short form content, the narrative, the values, no, it's not a vibe.
So as a prominent media personality and influencer, I want you to talk about, how do you balance between creating engaging content that's going to go viral or promoting social causes? Because I know you kind of balance between both.
You know, bruh.
Have these conversations all the time.
Oh my goodness. This is crazy, because like, content that's like about love and relationships always does well. Mm. Because like, that's just what people, like everyday life, people love globally. You know, anything that's funny always does well. Travel content always does well. there have been a few times that I've done content where it's like about a social issue or it's about a community issue. And funny enough, it goes viral. It does well. But I find that it does better on Twitter. Twitter is a place where I think because it has a just a different experience and what people are expecting there is information. People go there for information. People do not go to Instagram really for information. TikTok is everything, right? Whatever you're looking for. But on Instagram, it's you know, it's vibes, it's inshallah, it's crew,
entertainment,
aesthetics, it's, you know, outfits, it's fashion. And for me, before I used to be very like, oh, well, you got to take what I got to give you. Bibs, let me give the platform what the platform wants because it's hard work creating content. So, you know, my more social cause content will go on Twitter. My more fun, you know, advice content will go on Instagram. And even at that, it's good advice. Like, I feel like, you know, you consider it advice that I'm like, I want to make sure that people, when they're scrolling through their timeline, they have something to think about or something that will make them live a better life or something that I've learned that I feel like is helping me. So, I mean, I don't go out of the box of like creating content that's completely opposite my personality, but you have to have strategy. And the strategy is Instagram even has a specific amount of seconds they want. The Instagram, if we start talking about Instagram now, that place.
It's the wild, wild west.
It's a wild, wild west, you know? But what I love is no matter what, social media I think is king. I think that you can create whatever life you want for yourself with it. And I also think that being on social media, you have the responsibility to consume what helps you, you know? So when we're talking about virality and, you know, sensational content and content that's, you know, always overtly belittling women or, you know, that kind of thing, at the end of the day, the reason why that content does well is because someone's watching it. So is the onus on the creator or is it on the viewer that's collecting it? You know, it's kind of like that narrative of the chicken before the egg. Who is it before? Someone recently came out and was talking about how Nigerian blogs need to do better and, you know, like the content that they're pushing. And it's like, okay, but the reason why they put that content out is because that's the where they get the most response. So whose fault is it? I think it's the consumer, to be honest. I think that if the consumer doesn't respond to a specific type of content, the creator is not going to create that content. Creators are only motivated by what the consumer wants. It's just that simple.
Okay. Yeah. And so speaking on social media, I want you to tell me one lesson, right, that social media has taught you about people, perception, and influence.
Ooh, people, perception, influence. So first things first, I'm going to talk about, this is the, I want to talk about the good and then I'm going to talk about the bad. I think social media is, I think it's one of the greatest inventions ever.
It is.
In the fact that someone who I generally would never have an opportunity to connect with, if I'm strategic, if I'm smart, if I'm tactful, I can get a response from them and I can connect to them. I've DM'd people who are like Hollywood celebrities and they've responded. And I'm just like, this is crazy. Like, where would I meet you from? And I think that, you know, social media creates connections where we really are not, a lot of us are not utilizing them the way we should. And we're not on there thinking about it as a massive job opportunity. Like when you think about it, social media can give you access to opportunities that you never would be able to get access to because you're in a different part of the world. So when it comes to social media, that's my general perception about it, is that it is a massive opportunity and it's a gold mine. Now, how, in terms of, the second part was how it relates to like who we are as, right? I feel like there's a lot of judgment though about who people are. And, you know, I think that people underestimate how their social media is a, like a summary book of your life. And it's unfortunate and it is what it is, but I've definitely met people who, you know, I've made preconceived notions about, and then I meet them and I'm just like, oh my gosh, you're nothing like your aesthetic or your vibe. You're like, you're cool, you know? And that's because of the person wants to create a specific identity about themselves. But then you meet them and it's just like, ah, you're so nice. You're so lovely. You're not, you know, so I've learned to not take people's social media seriously. I've learned to, I take social media as work. Whenever I see someone's social media, whatever is on their page, I always believe that it's work and there's something that they have an agenda that they're pushing. And I don't use that word agenda as a loader term. I use it as just there's something they want and that is what curated is on their social media. It's curated. But I've learned to really look beyond that. Like, you know, I will meet someone and I will, like, I have a thing where if I'm dating someone, I do not want them following my social media, on my social media, seeing my social media. Because I just don't, like, I'm just like, it's work. Like, for, especially for me, it's work. And that's because, you know, I can post something and then you think it's about you. And it's like, it's not about you. It's a trending topic. I'm not subbing you.
Yes.
I don't sub people. I'm going to call it and say it as it is. You know, so really understanding that for most people, I wish more people knew that social media was work. Mm. I wish they didn't take it as seriously in that way. Mm. That it's just a work thing for a lot of people. And people have a curated identity that they're trying to push across for a specific reason.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, I feel like I agree with that. But a part of me, when I was single, if I met a woman and I didn't know her social media, I'd be like, I need to see your social media. I just need to know the balance. Because you are right. There is a difference between how you might project yourself on socials and how you might. Yeah. But I want to know that other side chat so that I can make an informed decision for both sides. Because if, because going back to what you said about perception, it's like, I know how I'm perceiving you, but how have you been wanting other people to perceive you outside?
That's a great point.
Because
why do you want other people to perceive you outside like that?
Exactly. So not the one you, I'm now not see your social media. I didn't go outside. Someone like, oh, okay. So
no, and I totally
so I like to
you.
Know both sides. And I'm like, okay, cool. I see. And it's even intriguing, right? Like, okay, you're mysterious. Like you're able to code switch. Right. And I'm like, okay, cool. That's great. But I need to know the code that you're switching to first. Not you go and overcode and then now we're now looking at each other like.
So you know what's interesting is that I'm very like, for people who don't use social media for work, I want to see your social media.
Yeah.
The reason why is because I know what I use my social media is for work.
I use it for livelihood.
I use it for livelihood. Yes. So it's very strategic and curated. But for someone who you're just there for vibes, I best believe I'm reading every single one of your tweets. Especially if you're a guy, I want to know how you think about something, what you said about this, how you responded, especially Twitter. Like, yeah. Twitter is your thoughts, bruh. You bet. Babes, if you're dating someone, go Google their Twitter.
Don't I had to erase a lot of his tweets.
Why are you snitching on the podcast? Bro, I just do episode one. Yeah, what are you about doing? Relax. Relax. But also, people don't realize we grew up on social media. I joined Twitter when I was 19.
Like,
I'm 34. I've literally been on Twitter for 10 plus years. So thoughts. I remember we were at an event at Afrotech at Austin, and some guy comes up to me. He's like, oh my God, HA Creates. I was like, God, please, I beg. And he basically proceeds to tell me all the stuff that they knew from like 8, 9, 10 years. And I'm like, bro, but I'm a different human being now. Like, I mean, I don't move like this anymore.
You don't move like that anymore.
In growing up on social media though, the thing is, it still speaks to who you are. Your jokes are still you, whatever, but you might have evolved, but let's now know how to navigate with that.
Definitely. Yeah. So like, I just feel like, yes, definitely check on the person's social media, but also understand like this positioning, right? Everyone is, not everyone, people who use social media for livelihood are positioning. If you don't use social media for livelihood, what's going on? Like, I would check. I'm also like not really big on like men, like guys that I'm dating. I don't want you to have a social media, like being a ghost. Like, what are you doing? Like, unless you have like a specific product you're pushing, like unless you're pushing an art, unless you're pushing something, like, I'm very, like, what are you doing online, right? Like, what are you, you know?
But when they say that you're hiding him, so that in case you guys end, you want him to just disappear.
Maybe. Maybe. You know what's funny? Despite the fact that I, like, do a lot of public stuff, I'm really private.
Yeah.
Like, I'm very, like, I don't post my family. And I don't think I would ever post, like, the person I'm dating or, like, you know. I don't know. I think that's how I feel now, but.
People are mean.
Yeah.
On social media.
People are mean. I definitely would not post my kids. That one, but that's for also because of people are pedophiles.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So yeah.
Well, speaking of this, you have like any pressure, you know, especially you're seeing a lot of influencers, they're stepping their game up, okay? They're documenting every little part of their life. Yeah. So because you're a private person, I'm quite private too. I don't show every aspect of my life. Yeah. Do you feel pressure to show up a specific way? Or do you kind of say, you know what, I'm very comfortable with what I show you. What I show you is for a reason.
Yeah. No, definitely. I've been lying to myself as I said I didn't feel pressure. Mm. I definitely feel like there's pressure to show up. There's pressure to, you know, be more vulnerable. And that's something that I've been working on, not because of I want to respond to the audience, but because I want to work on vulnerability in general. Mm. Vulnerability is not something that easily comes to me, and it shows in my work. So I'm not private because I'm afraid of the audience. It's more of a, I'm private because it's a control thing.
It makes you uncomfortable.
No, it's a control thing.
Mm. It's a control thing.
Yeah, it's a control thing. It's
I see why you're both friends. Since we're taking shots.
It's a control thing for sure. So I'm learning, I want to grow and I want to stretch myself. So if there's going to be more vulnerability, it's because I'm trying to loosen control. Like, for example, I recently did a post where, and this might seem like something little, but I had like a whole acne thing. And being able to show up online in the rawness of like my skin and just how, you know, not nice my skin was looking, that was a moment of vulnerability for me. Not, and it wasn't like a, oh, but I remember looking back and I was just like, oh my gosh, I don't know if 2 years I would have, 2 years ago I would have done that. You know, so losing control of like what people, you want people to perceive about you. And I am going to try, because I'm not a lifestyle content creator. I always say that I'm not. And being a lifestyle content creator is bearing your soul to the world. You know, and you've seen people get rewarded from it, but a lot of times they turn their backs on those very same people. And the question is, you know, do I have something in exchange for being a lifestyle content creator? What am I, why am I doing it? What value are they going to get? If I do not feel like it's going to be valuable for my audience, then I will not do it. So it has to be valuable. I'm not interested in doing it because other people are doing it. I'm interested in doing it because I believe this brings value to my audience and they can learn from something, learn from it, and I can learn from them response as well.
So in your view, what does it mean to be an Afropolitan?
You know, I never in my life thought that we would come to a place where being an African is a thing. You know, we grew up, especially for us, like we grew up in a time where even when I was in school in like Israel and, you know, even living in Kenya, and I went to, I mean, Kenya, where they are mostly supposed to be, is an African country. You know, we were always seen as just like, and I think we underestimate how much we grew up with really negative perceptions of Africa on TV. Constantly, those ads were running of Kwashoko, children malnourished, flies on their faces, flies on their body. You know, feed the children, do this for the children. Africa is in dire need. And there were parts of Africa and still that are in dire need of support. Well, we'll see. I was going to talk about the USA thing, but crazy. But to now come to a place where being African is cool is insane to me. Like, it's insane to me. I talked to my friends who are British, and it was so bad for them that they used to pretend to be Jamaican and Caribbean. They couldn't even be. I think in America, you could be, but they were called, it was not African booty scratcher, they used to call. You know, and I remember even my experience when I was in Wichita. I went to Wichita for a year. This was the high school I went to. And, you know, just people have derogatory things to say to me. I remember reading, what's that book with the Joseph Conrad book? The Heart of Darkness. And it's a book about, you know, the guy who sails through the Congo River and my English AP English teacher looking at me and asking me about the Congo. And I was just like, my guy, I ain't got it. I'm Nigerian. Never been there. You know, and just the way kids responded to me. Very, very, very like, oh, you African? So to now see people be like, yo, I love Nigerians. Yo, like people are excited. The other day I saw a video of Rihanna mimicking a Nigerian accent. And I was just like, that's crazy. Like, you know, she's like, my sister, come here, come here, come here. Like, just the fact that it's an exciting time to be African and the idea that Nigerian are Yahoo boys, it's that narrative is dying.
Yeah.
They're fighting hard to make it not die, but there's a new narrative that Nigerians are intelligent or smart. That is what it is for me to be Afropolitan. It's that we, the contributions that we add to this world, they can no longer be undermined. Absolutely not. We are not nuisances. We are not lazy. We're not Yahoo boys and Yahoo girls. You know, we work hard. We contribute to our society and our community. And we're very, very talented people. And I think globally, when I think about like what the work you guys are doing with the community of Afropolitans, that's what it is, right? You're piecing all these pieces together and you're saying, hey, you from here, you from there, you from here, you're all African, but you're all killing it in your own respective zones. Like, I love it. I love it. It's I'm happy that my children can grow up and be happy to be Nigerian.
And also the joy that and the settledness that comes from being authentic in your own self, right? When I first moved, I remember because I was the only black kid in the school, I think it helped me because I got to see what it felt like for white people to perceive blackness in real time. So I'm observing them and they're like, no, this is all dope. You should know like about rap. You should know about this other thing. And I'm like, I'm only Nigerian. I'm from West Africa. I don't know everything about blackness. But then when I now started going to study all these things because it felt like I was letting down my race, I was like, no, this is all dope. But this was high school. But when I went to college and I'm now saying, hey, it should be like Wakanda in here. You're now seeing all the mini divisions between all the diaspora groups. And I'm looking at everyone like, I'm so confused where I'm coming from. They think it's all lit. Why are we not together? And like you said, back then, you see a Nigerian person, they'll say their name is Ben. And then you see their name is Benga. I'm like, bro, I'm gonna need you to be going by Benga. But if you want to go by Ben, that's cool.
Benga.
Be like, yo, I'm oh Ben. God. I'm like, no, bro. It says with Benga. Like, what are you saying?
I've never seen that combination.
No, they do it, right? And people would figure out ways to drop their names to make other folks feel comfortable. So again,
I don't have a choice. It's just chicken.
Yeah, it's a chicken.
Yeah. There's no cheat.
So I don't have a. I used to go by Bola.
Mm-hmm.
Now that was when I was in school in Israel because it was an American school in Kenya. I used to go by Bola. So imagine I do 4 years as Bola, come to Nigeria because you come back every 4 years, and it was Bolanle, and you can't even call me Bola. Like anybody that calls me Bola, you know I'm not gonna answer you. Mm-hmm. So I remember, you know, recently I was like, when I go to America or when I'm in America, I'm never going to introduce myself as Bola. It is Bolanle.
You're going to say
it. Figure it out.
Yeah.
I now write it phonetically for them. Mm-hmm. Then I'll say, do you have a nickname? No, babes. No. Don't have one. It's Bolanle. If I can pronounce your name, Rachel,
you
can pronounce my name, Bolanle. You know, they're like, oh, okay, cool. I'm like, yeah. Just take time and learn it. Like, don't be, be open to the fact that they're names outside of your cultural ideas. Mm-hmm. So I don't even have an English name. I actually don't have one. No.
And actually, I love how like proud you are of your identity, because a lot of us had to go through a lot with all the trauma in high school. So I want you to talk about how that shaped you in your storytelling.
Man, you know, I think I got it from, so definitely from my upbringing. My dad is like, my parents were very big on like letting us be who we are as kids. Like my dad was very like, you know, if that's what you want to do, do it. You know, my mom, no, there was never any pressure. But I also think that they did that because they knew that I was quite focused on what it is that I want to do.
Yeah.
So since I was 16, I always knew I wanted to be in media. I've always known that I wanted to do art, and I've always wanted to create content of some form. And, when you're in places where you're an other, you have two choices. You either conform or you stand out. And I'm not going to say stand out, you be yourself. Because if you let people tell you who you are, you're not going to stand.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that early growing up. I also learned that working in the industry very young, because I started like when I was super young, and I was thrust into like a massive place of opportunity. And I realized that if I don't tell them who I am, these people are going to tell me how I should look, what I should wear, how I should talk, how I should present. You know, people had so many opinions about what I look like. Should I lose weight? Should I do this? All these things that fortunately I was able to be like, do not internalize this stuff, Bolanle.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know who you are, there's going to be a space and they will fill it up for you. And I did a lot of reflection and I asked myself, I said, what do I want to be known for? Which is where I came up with the fact that legacy. When I die, what do people say Bolanle did?
Yeah.
What would people say Bolanle was like? How would people say Bolanle treated people? Like, those are the things that take, like, the every day when I wake up and I make decisions and I ask myself where my confidence comes from, it's from that. It's most definitely from that.
Yeah. So I want to ask you very point blank, right? What was the lowest point of your career and what did it teach you?
Ooh, this is such a good question. And it took me so long to get over this. So if you don't learn failure early, it's going to be a serious problem. I did not learn failure very early. And I say that I was a risk taker and I usually excelled at what I did. Now, because I was so used to that, I was just like, I applied for a massive opportunity. It was like a BBC Komla Dumor documentary award. And I was really excited about it. And I scaled through the first round, and I think I got to the second round. And I wasn't chosen. I didn't get the final pick. Mm-hmm. I've never been so shattered. It was like, you guys would have thought I lost $1 million. But I was so shattered. Like, it just shattered me. Like, it took... I don't know what it was. I think it was the fact that I was so close and I didn't win, but also the fact that I was so confident that I was going to win. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, I'm not good at producing. I'm not a good documentary filmmaker. I can never do this. And I shut down. You guys, I shut down for like a year. It was crazy. And I remember in that 1 year being very upset. I also remember being very upset at God. It's just like, what is God having to do this? And I remember being very upset at the fact that I didn't feel like I had the skill set to be on that like international level for the BBC Kamala Damour Award. And it took a lot of time and a lot of me reflecting on why was I so shattered that I didn't get this opportunity. And what I discovered was that I had an idol of achievement and success, in that a lot of my... Now, the thing about being a type A person is, if you're not careful, a lot of your identity will be placed inside you being successful.
Yeah.
And it's like a weird balance where you have to learn how to strive for achievement, but your self-worth is not in the achievement. So that was a process of me unlearning that. You know, because what now happened is, when you go for something and you failed because of the hurt and the disappointment and the fact that your identity was in you getting this award and you getting accolades from it, now you're not getting it. So you're like, who am I? What am I about? You now have to realize it's not about you getting that. It's about the journey and the process. And number two, that thing doesn't make me, whether I get it or not. So that was the unlearning. Like, that was the part where I had to finally say, Bolani, you are not your achievement or your successes.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us, especially the way our society is now, because our society celebrates our social media and everything. Status. It's always like, I'm so excited to announce. I'm so happy to announce. You know, I was, that me, everything was, I'm so ready to announce. Now, people would say, oh, well, I'm not announcing things like, oh, I bought a car, oh, I bought a house, oh, I bought it. It was things that were like valuable, or, oh, I'm doing this for my community, I'm doing that. The funny thing about it is those little foxes come in different forms. And I had to realize that my identity is never in any success I have. Yeah. It is good to strive for success. It's good to strive for achievements, but it's about the journey. So that was one of the biggest, that year was tough, rough year for me.
I think it reminds me, one of the things I'd been reflecting on actually all year since January was, I went for my uncle's funeral, and in the sermon, it spoke about, like, what shall it profit a man to gain the whole world but lose his soul? And I tell you, I have sat with that quote for so long. And I remember, like, going AI with it, and it was like, actually, you know, what you should try and figure out is, how can you be in the world but not of it?
Yeah.
And it's that, you know, realizing, like, you can have these successes, but you can never be too attached to it, so that when it goes, you don't start, like, there's so many stories where you see people who lose maybe all their money or everything. They just stay in the house. They can't come out anymore, right? So you have to really get to a point where, yes, you're happy about the successes. Yes, you like the praise, but that when it does go the other way, you don't just, you know, become a hermit or feel like your world is over. Because a lot of that is always based on your perception of people thinking so much about you. Like, it's like, yes, people might say things, but they'll move on. Like, no one's consistently, like, bringing you up in every single situation. But, you know, I think it's something where you have to just learn to not be too attached to the outcomes.
Exactly. Exactly. I think I talked about it recently, someone said it's called a spotlight syndrome, where you think essentially that, like, everything is always about you. It's not being self-absorbed, but, like, you create yourself as the center of the story for every single moment.
Yeah.
And so, for example, you'll get embarrassed at every moment, maybe you did something, whereas they don't even remember that you tripped. They've moved on. They laugh at you, they've moved on. You know what I mean? So not creating yourself as the center of every single conversation.
Yeah.
It helps you try more, take more risk, and be okay with the failing. Idea of failure. So yeah. Okay.
So if you could change one thing about how the world sees African influencers, what would you want it to be?
Right. I feel like they're seeing us as gudu. I don't know if they're seeing us as bad. I think that, which type of influencer? That's the key word.
That's key.
I think the question I more so want to ask, because you're right, I think we have talented African influencers. I think some of the best. I think content creation is out of this world. So I agree with that statement. But more so, we're not seeing the money.
I fully agree on that.
So what do you think needs to change in order for global brands to start to pay African influencers?
Well, you know, this starts with the infrastructure, right? It starts with what we were talking about, how the brand doesn't come to the influencer, they go to the agency.
Yeah.
And the agency can say, some agencies can say, we can get them for free. So when you said that, the brand is going to say, this is business. Okay, you get them for free. Oh, those Africans, you don't got to pay them. You can reduce their rates, you know? So I think it comes down to agencies fighting for us. Mm-hmm. I think agencies really have to position and say that, no, you do need to pay them well. You do need to pay them equitably. I also think that there's a race issue there, because we know that even American, Black American influencers are not paid as well as white American influencers. So I think race plays a huge factor, but it comes down to systems and structures. Influencers have to band together. And the same thing that the beauty influencers in America did, where they said, this is our rate, this is where we start from, we also have to do that as well. So if the agency comes and says, oh, this is what we're giving, this is what we're doing, all the influencers have to say, no, we're not doing any exchange. This is what we're doing. This is the rate. I will say this. I know that for our market, they always say that conversion is not as high, in the fact that like spending power is not as strong.
Disposable income,
Exactly. Disposable income is not as much. So I understand the business angle there. But not everything is always about conversion. It depends. If you are trying to do conversion, there's a budget for that. If you're trying to do, you know, market penetration and you're trying to do visibility, there's a budget for that. But we do need to have the opportunity where brands understand that influencers, it's a lot of work. People are not playing games. It's expensive as well. With the way content is, content costs now. Do you understand? Your content has to be more flashy, more this, more curated, more that. We need agencies to fight for us. We need agencies to protect us. We need agencies to pay us equitably and say, hey, this is the budget. You're not going to get them for free. Because I think the narrative that they can get us for free is what actually ruined the market.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how do you see your own influence evolving, right? As I believe you're one of the OGs, right?
I know.
You are an OG.
I'm not an OG influencer. I'm a TV presenter that used to dress fashionably, got a lot of followers, and then fell into influencing.
True.
Now I feel like I'm learning, how to be a content creator, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Which sounds weird because I have followers. People are like, how does that work? But like being a content creator is so different. So that's how it's evolving. It's me being strategic, me being consistent. And it's me also having more fun. Like, I feel like, you know, I want to go back to the days where like my content was a lot more fun. Like I used to have a lot of fun, but it used to be fun because I used to travel all the time. Traveling will do that. It'll make your content. And you know, it's so funny. Like I think about all the brand trips I've been on, like all that stuff. And you know, there's times and seasons for that. That stuff is a lot of fun, but it's also a lot of work. So I definitely am seeing myself. Like, I'm really hoping, like, it's funny you asked me that. I am hoping to go into more lifestyle content this year. We'll see if it happens, though. If me and my therapist are able to solve my vulnerability issues.
If future generations could learn one lesson from your journey, what would it be and why?
Take risks. Mm-hmm. Take risks and take them early. And keep taking risks. Like, I think that I think about myself when I was younger. I'm a massive risk taker. Like, someone says, oh, do this. This might do this. Oh, yeah, let's do it. Let's go. You know, and as you get older, you kind of like...
Conservative.
And I feel like the progress and the rewards that I've made the most have been when I've taken massive risks. And I'm excited because, like, I've come back to that, like, youthful part of myself where, you know... my sister was like, oh, you never left it. And I'm like, no, compared to what I used to be, I know, you know, take risks and also be focused. I know this sounds boring, but like there are certain things that I'm just like, I was able to achieve like because of focus, because like I was able to block out the noise and having a strong sense of identity in self and who God has created you to be.
Yeah.
It's so important because especially like future generations, social media, we talk about it all the time, but it's so impressionable. Mm-hmm. And even as adults, guys, I think about me in my grown age, how I can see something and I'm like, hey, am I doing okay? How much more a younger person that's impressionable?
Yeah. Mm.
Be focused, like have blinders, like be okay with not being part of the group and the crew and the crowd. Those are two things. Take risk and be okay with not fitting in. Like those two things. I've never been someone who like, I have to feel like, oh, I have to do things because other people are doing them, you know? And I feel like that's protected me from a lot. It's protected me from doing a lot of things that I don't want to do. A lot of things that, you know, I know other people regret later in the future. So I'm very thankful that I've always had a very strong sense of self, you know, and it's been a blessing for me. Yeah.
The last question I want to ask you, this is rapid fire.
Okay. Yeah.
Who do you want to see here at Afropolitan? Whose story needs to be told?
So I've interviewed her and I think she would be great. Olamide from Topicals.
Okay.
She is really smart, like crazy smart. She's very smart and she has a lot of like gems and she's very insightful. I don't know why I never dropped the interview. That reminds me, I really need to drop it. But she shares a lot about a lot of practical things about what it takes to like be a founder and to create from scratch. I think she's amazing. I think she's very level-headed. She's very, very, very level-headed. But she's very like good about giving, these are the things you should do to get what you want.
Yeah.
And I like when people are like, it's like A, B, C, D. Because I know a lot of people are trying to create and stuff. She's definitely someone. And then also I would love to see Tems. Yeah, we were talking about Tems earlier, but
anointing.
Like, please give us this tack to the anointing.
Yes.
She's amazing and she's talented. Those two people, I think. Is there any guy? I'm just joking. I'm just, I love men. I love them.
Thank you for being with us.
It's so good to have you here, Malale.
Thank you, guys. This was so much fun. These are my people. Love them so much.